This Coin Week podcast is brought to you by PCGS, grading the 50th anniversary of the Silver Krugerrand and the Gold Krugerrand. To learn more, visit PCGS.com. In this episode of the Coin Week podcast, I sit down with Andrea from the YouTube channel The Coin Couch. She stopped by in the after hours at the Berlin's World Money Fair. We talk about coins, dead presidents, the Queen, our YouTube video channels, and what kind of coin to buy for your special lady friend. We also probably had a little too much to drink. So, Andrea, last time we caught up with each other. We were at the A&A, right?
Wow. Yeah,
and. It seemed to me that, it was a learning experience for you to kind of see what the U.S. market was like. Because it's a lot different, I think, than this very robust, professional European coin market.
To be honest, it's hugely different. Now, firstly, thank you for saying my channel is hugely popular. You must be talking with my mum. That's really nice. Secondly, I have to apologize for my voice because I've been working at this show for 3 days. And, yeah, I'll go ahead and answer your question. So that, for me, that was A&A. I've been doing A&A since 2013. So every year getting a bit more involved, seeing what's going on, and it always amazes me at the US coin shows because they are completely different to other coin shows.
It's kind of a weird dichotomy because if you think about it, US coins tend to be about the most expensive coins in the market. But when you come to our shows, it's like a band of gypsies.
To be honest, I've met some of the most interesting people in my life at the US coin shows. And I do like it when I return and they remember me from the year before and we have a chat. And, you know, it's always good just meeting and greeting. And, yeah, as you said, the gypsies, some of them are really nice. So that's good.
Well, gypsies can be nice.
Gypsies can be nice. They can.
So, Andrea, based on your interactions with the American coin market, what would an American sense coming to like the World Money Fair? I mean, this really is more of a trade show than I think any American coin show I've ever been to is.
To give you a really good example, the first day I had seen a friend that I made last year at A&A, he deals his own coins, and he came dressed to the nines. He was in a really nice suit, looking dapper. If you've ever lived in England, you'll know what that word means. Dressed to the nines, and I said, hey, what are you doing? You're in a suit. You know, normally I see this guy in the US, he's in cargo shorts, maybe a Hawaiian t-shirt, really laid back. And he said, hey, it's Berlin. This is a sexy show. So if there's any way to put it any better than that, these are massive stands, mints, coin companies put a lot of money into the show. You do have the regular down-to-earth dealers on the side still hanging over the tables, but really this is... I think it is the biggest show in the world.
So when we were in Anaheim, like we were shooting that video together, I joked that like I had not been close to a woman at a coin show. But actually in Europe, it's a lot different. You actually have booth babes. And I mean, this is a diverse crowd, a younger crowd too.
Yeah. So if I would say to any American collector, yes, come to Berlin. It's one of the biggest shows in the world. But yes, there's more girls. Definitely more girls to see and speak with about coins.
Does that mean that there are more women who collect coins here? In your experience?
Oh, now that's a tough one because I do see a lot of women at the shows and especially when I'm working on the booth, whether it has been for RAM in the past or EMK at the moment, there's still, a lot of women that will come with their husbands. Maybe they started collecting or got into it because of their husband because it was something they could share together. That's a tricky one. So I do see a lot of women in the US, but yeah, I would say on a whole, there is more here in Europe. So I've definitely spoken with a lot more ladies in the past few days than I have at past shows in the U.S.
So it seems to me that traditional numismatic motifs kind of are masculine in nature, but as we've seen a shift towards, modern or an ultra-modern type of coin product that's meant to be more of a lifestyle or aspirational brand, it seems like there's a lot more representation of sort of important events in your life, like getting married or having a baby or things like that. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the coin industry understands how to reach women collectors?
I think they're just trying to reach more people in general and definitely get more commercial with their coins. So, for example, a Valentine's Day coin, this is a coin that people would buy even if they're not coin collectors. It's a gift. You're making a tiny investment. You know, it's a 1 ounce silver coin. It might have a little bit of diamonds per se in it, but would I say it's directly aimed at women? No, I'd say those products are directly aimed at men to buy for women
Right.
And then hopefully, you know, the girls will get on board with collecting in the future.
So your husband's a coin dealer, but if he bought you a coin, would you feel that that was an appropriate gift, or would you look at him all cross?
I'd be really mad if he had to buy it. I mean, he should get a good deal for it and get it free, maybe, you know, because someone's really nice to him or something. No, you know. Would I think that was a nice gift? I suppose what coin it was. So if we're talking, you know, it was something that I used to like when I worked at the Mint, something historical, then, yeah, I would think it was really thoughtful. But just if he's listening, you don't need to buy me the Valentine's Day coin.
What if it was like
it's a lovely coin.
What if it was like the 100th anniversary of the invention of the dishwasher?
Well, that wouldn't mean anything. We don't have a dishwasher. We're renovating. Everything's up in the air. Wow. When did I miss the 50th anniversary? I'm just so way behind on my dishwashing news.
So what's your favorite part about hosting the Coin Couch? And what was sort of your motivation behind that?
My motivation was moving to Germany. So when I moved to Germany, obviously, I did not speak a lot of German. Making friends is also very hard. I don't know if you realize this. When you get older, it's not like in school. You know, it's not like, oh, wow, we have the same sneakers. Let's be best friends. So when you get older, it becomes a lot harder to make friends. Obviously, you're close with the people that you work with, but getting out of that initial circle does present more challenges. So one was not speaking German, two was, you know, I needed a bit of an outlet, and three was I really missed giving tours at the Mint and just talking about coins every day. And I watched you and another YouTube channel out there, and I thought, well, why can't I do this? Why can't I talk about coins?
And do it better.
Do it better. Well, I was going to, you know, that was going to be in my initial channel trailer, but I decided it's probably better to leave that out just right. In case we actually become friends. but yeah, it was mostly just so I could talk about coins and have an outlet. And now it's become something completely different. It's more than that, you know. It's, I thought, oh, if I get onto YouTube and I need this many subscribers, and now I just count any video by the comments. Have I engaged someone? Have they learned something? Can I answer a question, you know, and just have a bit of fun? I mean, so many comments that I get, I'll read them and just laugh out loud at the computer desk, whether it be at home, at work. And it's actually making friends online. And I think that's been the most important thing.
So I always think about the difference between the hard sell and the soft sell when you're talking about marketing. Obviously, you know, we're in a business as a publication where advertisers want to see results for their investment.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me that when there's a value that you get from engaging with people that is not borne out by directly a one-to-one ratio with like how many coins you sell. It seems like one of the cool things about the Coin Couch is that, you know, there isn't a direct sell like sort of push to it. It's really just, you know, trying to build a relationship with an audience, with the host, try to have fun with the coins. And if you enjoy that coin, then, you know, the opportunity certainly is there to sell it. But there's a difference between saying, hey, you need to buy this coin. Here's the mintage. It's a great buy and so on. I think people tune that out.
For sure. It was actually really great. When I first started the Coin Couch, I actually had a discussion with my boss at EMK. And I said, well, would this be okay? Like, is this a conflict of interest or whatever it may be? But at that stage, you know, I just moved to Europe, I wasn't rolling in money, and I couldn't afford to buy coins every week to have enough to show. So I had spoken to him about borrowing coins from the company. So in each video, you will see that this coin was borrowed from EMK. But you know, I haven't collected this. There's other videos that show my private collection. But I guess in a way that is kind of a soft sell. But I think if you're open and transparent about it, basically I'm just trying to show people things that they maybe are thinking about buying that I have access to. So that's always been the behind the scenes. I work in the industry, so I can show you things that not everyone always gets to see. And I think that's the most important. Well, for me, that's the most important part. Just getting in there, take a camera and take you somewhere that you wouldn't normally be allowed to go.
Yeah, and no, I think that's only important. I mean, when we make videos, one of the things I try to convey, and I don't know how successful I am all the time, but I try to show that like this is really a lifestyle in a way for us. You know, this like I try to look at coin writing as aspirational. You know, so if you know, we go to a show, we go to these amazing cities. You know, we meet these amazing people. We interact with like wealthy people sometimes. We interact with artists, and we interact with you know, manufacturers of things. I mean, it's a very sophisticated logistics train that goes into a successful industry like this. And what I try to convey to people is that, you know, if you you're part of the story. You know, a collector is only the part of the story. It's not just, you're not just some random person. Like, the whole thing needs you in order to exist.
Of course. But I like the fact that you said the word story, because for me, at the end of the day, the design, the history, but it's the story behind each coin. And so me showing coins on my channel, I just want to engage more with the stories. And I think that's where it becomes more interesting. Historically, there's always, I like little stories about the designs or the designer personally. I think they're really interesting and you can relate on that human level. But at the end of the day, if you like the coin, you like the coin. And if you don't, well, you've heard something that you didn't know before. So that's, I'm going for more of the entertainment factor and the fun factor than I am selling. And I don't want to be, you know, hi, I'm Andrea. Let's buy this beautiful coin. Because I don't like to watch that. And I always like to say, if I don't watch it, then I wouldn't expect you to.
So in your past professional life, you worked for the Royal Australian Mint, like you said. So what was the relationship between the Royal Australian Mint and the Perth Mint? I mean, did you guys like have like knife fights in the alley, or did you guys get along?
Well, that's a big alley, because Canberra and Perth are so far
away
from each other. And, you know, at the end of the day, you've got two great mints in Australia producing very different products. You know, Royal Australian Mint, their coin styles are very different to Perth Mint's. So Perth Mint does have a wider variety, doing different things. They start a lot more things with colour. But then I think Royal Australian Mint is really concentrating on one particular style. I mean, let's take, for example, the Crux coin. It was award-winning when it first came out, won engineering awards within Australia. Personally, it's one of my top favourite coins ever because of the engineering, because of the colour printing done on it. And I just think they put a lot more work into rather one series than 10 series. But then again, that's not saying anything against Perth Mint. Obviously now I'm out of the loop completely working for a German distributor, so I don't want to say anything really bad about the mints. But, you know, there was always a little bit of conflict here and there.
But it seemed like they could get away with some things that, you know, the RAM probably couldn't do.
Probably. I have to say, when I was working at a Royal Australian Mint, and Perth Mint brought out the Opal series with that little bit of opal in the coin, I remember thinking, man, why didn't we think of that? You know, that's really cool. But there's all these other, like, obviously, colour coins. If you're doing anything with a licensed product, so Perth Mint have a lot of things on coins that may be a little bit too tricky for RAM to do. And then Perth Mint also have a lot of products that are pressed on Tuvalu, for example. So maybe you're able to get out of that initial rule circle because you are pressing that on another country. But my general opinion, at the end of the day, I was really proud to work at RAM. I don't know what it's like to work at Perth Mint. You know, if they want to call me after this, I'll do a trial for a week or something. That'll be fine. I'll give them a go. But it is really hot down there. I don't know if I want it that hot.
So do you think Queen Elizabeth II gets to see all the coins that come out with her effigy on it?
Now, this was really interesting because I had a chat with someone at Popjoy the other day, and I think it was, which coin was it? Maybe the recent Pegasus coin or another bullion coin, but I was told that Queen Elizabeth had personally approved this effigy, this particular effigy. So I never know what to think with that. Am I thinking that she's actually looking at it going, yes, this is lovely?
This is lovely.
What a bother. No, all good on this one. But no, I think it actually, at the end of the day, I mean, think about it. She's Queen of the Commonwealth. Is she really going to be checking out these coins, or is she just going to have some staff members check it off?
Well, I just wonder who approved the 50th anniversary of Playboy magazine coin for Gibraltar with her image on the other side.
See, I don't know what's worse about that, the Playboy image or the fact that, you know, a little nip and tuck on the other side of the coin wouldn't go astray. Just get that chin a bit lifted. Well, if I was approving my own coins, they wouldn't look that.
I think,
you know, I wouldn't be a true.
I think it was the fourth effigy. I think it was okay.
Now, Charles, I need to ask you a question because we've gotten onto the subject of the Queen. A lot of people that comment on my videos are like, "Oh, I love that coin, except for the other side." And there must be this thing in the U.S. Oh, the Queen again. The Queen's on that. The Queen's on that. She is on so many coins. Yes, in my mind, she's the Queen. I mean, we just need to get over that. But what is the thoughts? So, I'm going to say up over.
So
it's not down under, but what's the thoughts up over?
So I think about it this way. 1,000 years from now, first of all, we'll all be dead. But when people look back at our culture and civilization, they're going to find 1 billion or more hundreds of billions of Queen Elizabeth II coins. And I wonder about the idea that they're going to have about our culture and our civilization that she's on so many coins. They'll probably get the wrong idea that like she ruled the world or something, because there's like Australia, Niue, Tuvalu. First of all, those places will be underwater. What I'm saying is for a monarch with the absolute almost no power at all, she's had like the biggest impact on like the numismatic scene of any monarch in history.
Yeah, but I don't think that was her aim.
No. I'm just saying, like, we're dealing with coins. We're not dealing with, like...
Yeah, but it's just the way it is. Like, I'm the monarch, so I'm on the coin. That's the rule, you know? When I pose the question to you, I'm sure it'll be the same when there's someone else on it, you know? I can't see this person's face anymore.
No. I was going to say about Queen Elizabeth. I mean, think about it. You know, it's a monarchy without, you know, the power that, you know, like George V or, you know, the pre-World War II monarchs had, and she's been on so many coins for so many years. Mm. And in fact, I think, you know, when she ultimately sheds this mortal coil, I think people will miss her being there, especially if Charles is on the coin. And
come back, Liz. Come back.
And then, but you know, I think William will probably be a popular effigy.
Well, I'm actually personally wondering whether we're going to see Charles. Is he going to go for it, or is he just going to step to the side and say, you know what? I'm going to take a break. I'm going to sit this one out, you know?
No, there is a William
coin. Good luck, Will.
There is a William coin out there. It's absolutely terrible.
I haven't seen that.
It's one where
does it have his face on it?
Yeah, you know, he's riding a water ski.
Well, he can't look terrible in anything, so
But who says...
I've seen this man.
I got an idea. Will on a water ski. Let's do a coin on it. Whoever greenlights that project.
Whoever thinks that's the best out of all the ideas, you know? Like, I mean, what was come up before that? We'll do this, we'll do this. No, we're going to have to go with the water ski, guys. I mean, this is the best choice.
I can see the marketing meeting. Here's Will with some puppies. Here's Will on a water ski.
Here's Will with Corbies. Oh, England go crazy.
Sounds like Abdur. Beth talking into what's his name? Ron Curry.
So what do you think? First of all, another thing I'll say about the queen on the effigy coin. I know I kind of clown on the subject, but you know, I think it makes it harder for the world mints to compete in the U.S. because of that. I think having that effigy all the time, like collectors kind of want to see more variety. But what I've seen in the last decade or so is that they've really gone out of their way to create texture and, you know, work with that motif to make it a little bit, you know, the different coins to be special. I mean, you see it with the finish, you see it with sort of the I call it the under engraving, mm-hmm. you know, and, yeah. and stuff like that. But, you know, you can't take away from the innovation that, you know, we've seen from the mints as far as like creating just really impressive designs that, you know, they only have one side to work with really. And then they really still create things that are more interesting than, I mean, our mint has made the same penny design on the obverse for over 100 years.
I'm glad that you actually brought up your mint as in the US mint, because I was about to call you out for calling, you know, I think US collectors are a little bit bored with the queen.
Right,
so
right.
You've only got one side to be bored with, you know?
But that's the thing, though. But you ask American collectors, they will tell you that they want to bring liberty back. You know, the modern period of U.S. coins basically began, in my opinion, in 1932. So George Washington, the quarter, the quarter comes out. It's supposed to be a 1-year commemorative, and the Standing Liberty quarter was the circulating quarter at the time. And the Washington quarter was so popular in 1934 when they made more quarters, they kept it. We already had the Lincoln cent in 1909, but that was really kind of the oddball coin in a period that was mostly about liberty and beauty and allegory. In 1938, the Jefferson nickel comes out, and it has like a building on the back, the Monticello, and collectors were like enraged by it. They thought that architecture was not appropriate for a coin. It was just,
really?
It was not good enough.
But at the time, this was...
But this is what the trend was. So then in 1946, Roosevelt dies, and the dime comes out with him. So that gets rid of the Mercury dime, Wing Liberty dime, which was one of the most popular dime designs we had. And so we saw this shift from allegorical figures to presidents. And the presidents, it's almost hard to get rid of a president because it's almost like you're punishing them.
Of course, yeah.
So we have this issue now where... a group of activists agitated the Treasury to replace Andrew Jackson, who was very controversial, arguably a despicable president, with Harriet Tubman, who was like a basically someone who is a
Republican. Wasn't he like the goody-goody? We're not taught every single American president in our school, I apologize for that, everyone.
Andrew Jackson was like a renowned Indian fighter who essentially like had a policy of genocide against the Native Americans. Who
it's probably not going to be too well on the polls.
He evicted the Cherokee Indians from their territory so that they could come in and steal gold from their territory. And on top of that, he didn't follow the Supreme Court orders.
He
smashed the Bank of the United States, which plummeted the American economy into depression under Martin Van Buren, his predecessor. They created these things called hard times tokens in the U.S. because they didn't have money.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Jackson has a very kind of mixed reputation. I would say if you're any way objective, you'd think he was a terrible president.
Right.
So so he's on the $20 bill. He hated the U.S. bank, but he's on a Federal Reserve note, which is basically the U.S. bank. So he was a hard money advocate for gold and silver, he's on a piece of paper money. So it literally makes no sense. Just like having a Mark Twain coin who is an atheist and having In God We Trust on it.
So these are the
pretzel logics that we get into as Americans. But the movement was to replace him with Harriet Tubman on the note. But then it seems like it's a punishment against Jackson. Like, oh, well, Jackson's not good enough. You're replacing him with somebody.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem that we have with American numismatics, is that in order to change anything, we'll either need to have like good marketing, like the Mint saying, well, the presidents have done a great job for 100 years, but now we're going to change them with like great Americans in the 20th century or something where everything has changed. Or it looks like a punishment, like you're trying to rewrite history and be revisionist.
I think it's always difficult when you, recently Australia went through the changing of the $5 note. To make it more secure, they've refreshed the design, and there was talk of changing the actual design. Right now, back to Queen Elizabeth II, she's on the $5 note, but there was talk of changing that design. And there was a lot of people sort of like, well, why, you know? And sometimes, like, don't get me wrong, Australians feel the same way about US people about the Queen, like, oh, you know, she's our Queen, but is she really, like, what does she do, you know? There's not really, when it comes down to Australia, it's like our politicians, our politics, you know, we'll sort ourselves out. When it's really big things, we ask permission, and usually we get it from Buckingham Palace if we need a new Governor General or something like that. You know, it gets worked out. But I think There's a part of a nation that needs to stick with its tradition. So you're saying, yeah, he was a despicable president, and obviously nowadays you would have found out more than what the people at that time knew. But I think it's still relevant to history. We need to keep some of these things in place for us to just acknowledge that it happened, basically.
All right, so last question. So when you put your videos up on YouTube, I mean, do you you read the comments? Do you get good feedback, bad feedback? What do you do when somebody doesn't like a video? Because I had that happen to me recently, and it kind of blew me away.
Okay. After the crying and the shaking and the screaming stops, so I'll first read the comment, and I'll be like, okay, right. So someone hasn't liked this video. That's all right. When I first started, this really, it hurts. You know, it's like someone doesn't like it. The worst part is they don't tell you why they don't like it. So it's like, all right, so you're going to douche on my channel, that's fine, but why don't you like it? Why? Do you want me to get better at this, or are you just going to keep douching every episode? So I actually made a video about negative comments. And as soon as I had made this video about people leaving negative comments, it was like, oh, okay, this is gone now. It was like off my shoulders. I don't care. So now someone is, of course, everyone has their opinion, and that's fine to share it. My point is, if you're actually trying to make what you're watching better, if you don't like it and you want to make it better, then why not leave some constructive comments? Like, Andrea, this was a crap video because it was all shot in the dark, or you didn't use the right facts about a coin, or, you know, no one's interested in that coin. Whatever, you know, the reason may be, if you're not going to help towards it, then, you know, if you're really hating it that much, unsubscribe.
Right.
I used to work in a summer camp in the US, and one of the biggest sayings was, if you're not making it better, we don't need you.
Right.
And that's the way I feel about that. If you want to, don't come to my channel and put negative comments, because it, you know, my other subscribers that really do like what they're seeing, they're going to jump on you and they're going to troll you back. So at the end of the day, I'll accept bad comments. That's fine. Constructive comments are obviously better, but I don't, you know, if someone's leaving offensive language and stuff, that'll just be deleted straight away, because it's a family channel, you know.
Yes, so sometimes what happens to me when I'm at coin shows is I get like asked, hey, can you make this video about this topic? And then I rack my brain, like, how am I possibly going to make this interesting to people? Because the thing, you know, it's totally death is when you start uploading like boring or lame videos.
Because it's hard, yeah, especially when you have a subject that, one, you don't really think is interesting yourself.
Right.
So say someone says, hey, talk about this coin. You're like, I don't really like this coin. I think this is a really tough subject to make interesting, but I think that's the creative part and that's the fun part. So if you don't like a particular coin, but you know that other people want to see it, that's what I really enjoy, is doing the research. So why is this coin important? Why is this historically important? And then sometimes half my video will not be of the coin. We'll just be mucking around trying to make it interesting.
Yeah, you know, so I had this like concept and I was like, I came up with like a great way to sell it and a great way to like, I thought like, I'll make this like, I'll approach it this way. And then I did like this like sort of like punk rocky kind of, it was a total punk kind of video. And I don't mean like, I don't mean like punk like to mess with people, but like it was like definitely like, you know, anarchist in a way.
Yeah.
And the problem was is that the interview just wasn't enough. You know, like it just wasn't, no matter how much, it was like listening to like geometry class. Okay. And so it was the dichotomy of me like trying to be a little bit too aggressive and pushing the video,
right,
and like the subject not really being like on point for that.
Yeah.
And then people just like rebelled against it. And I was like, well, I could take it down, but it's getting a lot of views.
No, but to be fair, I think it's important to actually, the videos that you aren't happy with yourself, keep them up there. And it gets people talking. You're still engaging people, whether they like it or not, or they're, you know, totally rioting against it. But, yeah, one, you're right about the views. But two, it's always a learning curve. And you have to try these things. Otherwise, your channel or anything that you're doing creatively is just going to be the same old thing. If you don't try and go other directions with it, you're not going to grow. You know, I think that's important too. Just human nature. Try different things.
All right. Well, Andrew, thanks for joining me, and have a safe trip home, and thanks for hanging out.
Thanks so much. Hey, I've only got to drive home. You've got to fly home, so safe trip to you.
Yeah, I get to go to Vienna, though. I look forward to
that. Oh, that's true. Good point.
All right. Take care.
See ya.
If you like the podcast, please share it with your friends. And remember, you can download all 56 episodes of the Coin Week podcast for free from the iTunes store. And while you're there, please leave us a review. For Coin Week, I'm editor Charles Morgan. Until next time, happy collecting.